The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Lynette's Shrimp House, located in Highland Park. It's Metro Detroit's premier destination, serving juicy fried shrimp, fish, and wings, alongside soul food sides and new additions to the menu, like turkey tacos and desserts. Located at 13548 Woodward in Highland Park, just north of the Davison, Lynette's is open for takeaway, noon to 8 Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Call now, get some Lynette's. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Thank you so much for being with me on this Tuesday. Coming up on today's program, we are just a couple of days out from Thanksgiving, and food is on everybody's mind. But access to food is not as easy for everybody right now as it may have been in the past. Obviously, the COVID crisis has impacted a lot of people, and food insecurity is on the rise. We're going to talk to an organization that is trying to do something about it here in our community. So looking forward to that conversation. And after that, some comments on what we witnessed yesterday in terms of the vote of the Michigan State Board of Canvassers. Tens of thousands of people watching a Board of Canvassers meeting. I never thought I'd see that happen. But given the strange circumstances, obviously, here we are. So we'll talk a bit about that on the program today as well. Stick around for the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Craig here. Thanks for checking out the show on this Tuesday. Coming up a little bit later on, some thoughts on what we saw yesterday with the Board of Canvassers meeting and what that means and my just impressions on everything that we're seeing and where we're going. So I'll have that a little bit later on. But first, I want to talk about something that is much more pressing in the immediate moment, and that, of course, is the issue of food insecurity. Now, the coronavirus has created all kinds of problems. A number of people are out of work, and if you're one of those people that's fortunate enough to have salary that's continued through this, fantastic. It's great that so many businesses have been able to do this through this really, really rough time. And, I mean, most of us, though, have seen some income reduction, and many of us have lost all of our income throughout this. And obviously, there's certain aid available through things like unemployment, but it's really a paltry amount when you take a look at it. And the lack of an action plan from the federal government since the first coronavirus rescue package was passed back in the spring, there's a lot of people struggling right now. So what do we do about that? How do we make sure that people have the food that they need going forward? Because this is going to be with us for quite a while. Well, a Detroit nonprofit called the Detroit Food Policy Council has been awarded a $1 million grant to help residents offset their food access struggles that really have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. They're launching something called Food Secure Detroit. It's a program that is going to give residents access to produce, cooking lessons, and a lot more to help those that are hardest hit by this virus. And joining me right now to talk a little bit more about it are a couple of people involved in this. There's, I believe, 9 organizations in all that are going to be doing this, but very excited to have with me today Winona Bynum, who, of course, is from the Detroit Food Policy Council, and also Danielle Todd of Make Food Not Waste joining me right now. Winona, Danielle, welcome to the Craig Folly Show. It's a pleasure to have you both here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you both. Winona, let's start with you for just a second, because, you know, before we began this interview, you were telling me this was a quick turnaround, this grant, this $1 million project. You needed to have something that was, quote unquote, shovel ready to qualify to get this funding, this much needed funding, because, frankly, this is a nationwide issue right now. What about your project was shovel ready? Was this something you've been working on and just waiting for somebody to drop this money so that you could actually do it?
That's pretty much it. Not just us, but all of our partners. So we're working with partners across the city like Danielle, who are doing great work in the city, making sure people not only get food, but information and things they need to cook and just all kind of cool things. And we and the Detroit Food Policy Council through our grocery store coalition had a project where we were working with grocery stores to make it a safe environment, getting them PPE, hand sanitizer, signage, all the things that they need to make sure that not only the food workers, the grocery store workers have a safe environment to work in, but the community has a safe environment to shop in. So we were able to expand that work. We had dollars earlier this year through the United Way to work on that project and then to get more to expand it to corner stores and smaller stores in the city. And then, like I said, the folks, so many of our partners were working on getting food, equipment, and information in the hands of our community members that are so in need of it.
Well, I mean, you know, a city like Detroit obviously has some food insecurity structure, you know, infrastructure built in already. You know, these are problems that we've been dealing with in this community for a long time. And there are organizations that are committed to doing this work. But obviously, COVID has probably exposed some pretty significant gaps in that system. Before we get to Danielle, I just want to ask Winona for a second, what have we learned about where the shortcomings are in our food delivery system here?
Right. So what we learned was there were a lot of infrastructure issues. We had just-in-time delivery setup. And so when you had that surge in demand or the break in delivery, there were issues. And also we had we already had so much food insecurity in the city. And we had great organizations like Forgotten Harvest and Gleaners stepping up already. But now this is all hands on deck. So a lot of organizations, such as Make Food Not Waste, Danielle's organization, which was really focusing more on making sure people knew how to, and I'll let her speak to her mission, but really making sure that they could stem the tide of food waste, they are stepping up in a big way to make sure people now have that food to use. And then we have our urban gardeners that are doing the same thing, who stepped up production in their gardens to make sure that their neighbors have more fresh produce to supplement those staple items that they were getting other places. So just everybody, there's been an all hands on deck. I've been so proud of Detroiters who are stepping up, and our community members, our surrounding community members who are stepping up and making sure that Detroiters have the things that they need.
Well, Danielle, let's talk a bit about that. Begin again. You know, a lot of people think of food assistance as being, you know, some canned goods here and there, people donating those sorts of things. But again, making sure people have healthy options is a critical component of this, especially if they're going to be, you know, needing this kind of assistance for a long time. Talk about your organization and sort of the role that you're filling there when it comes to not only providing the good stuff, but also educating people on how to use it.
Right. Yeah. Our organization is really about making sure that people are able to use up all the food that they do receive or that they do purchase. We don't want to see any food going to waste. We also try to kind of fit in the nooks and crannies that maybe aren't as easy for the large food rescue organizations like Forgotten Harvest and Gleaners to step into. We work closely with our partner, Food Rescue US Detroit, which also does a great job getting into those smaller restaurants and smaller locations to pick up excess food. We also worked a lot with urban farms over the past few months, making sure that if there was any excess, that wasn't going to waste either, and that was getting out to people. So we provide some of that resource, but also education to help teach people how to maximize all that produce and use it up so that they're not, you know, produce goes bad quickly. So we want to make sure that they have the tools and the understanding of how they can use that in their own homes. I will say too, just going off of what Winona said about the all hands on deck, that is such a great way to describe what's been going on really since the pandemic started. It's been so incredible to see the number of people that have, I think one person used the term leaderful, that we are full of leaders right now. And so many people have stepped forward to move food, to drive food, to make calls, to work on logistics. And that's really the project that we're working on right now. It wouldn't have been possible without so many people that have really used their expertise and their time and their energy to make sure that we can get these Thanksgiving meals out to people.
Well, and again, the Thanksgiving, obviously it's Thanksgiving week happening right now. And I know this is a big part of your immediate mission, Danielle, is getting people prepared mm-hmm. for Thanksgiving. But let's talk longer term for just a second, because I think this is important. Mm-hmm. You know, people, there's so much prepackaged food available to people. There is so much fast food available to people that when you give them fresh produce, when you give them, you know, here's some things, if they don't know how to cook, that's not necessarily helping them. I mean, it's helping obviously, but it's a lot better if they know what to do with it to maximize those food dollars and the food that they do have. At what point did we sort of realize that there needs to be more than just, hey, here you go, here's some food? At what point did we realize the teaching part of it needed to be included?
Yeah, I mean, that shift has been going on for quite some time nationally with the food banks. They have really done a great job of adding those fresher foods to, you know, in the beginning when food banks started out in the 70s, it was very canned food driven. Now, certainly that's still a part of it, but they've done a great job adding those extra items to it. The USDA is continuing a program right now that they started in the summer with it, where they are paying farmers to deliver fresh produce directly to food distribution sites here and all across the country. So people are getting boxes of food every week. But right, to your point, I mean, a lot of times that the food that comes to people, it might be unfamiliar. It might be something that they're not sure even how to cut it open. You know, if you give someone a giant butternut squash and they don't have a good knife to open that up, that's going to be a problem. So even groups like the Food Bank Council of Michigan has done work to process a lot of that kind of food, like, you know, the squashes and ones that are that need that extra, you know, level of processing to try to get that to people so it doesn't fall all to households. But the education piece is really important. And, you know, Gleaners has a program called Cooking Matters. There are other education outfits going on around the city and Eastern Market. It's really about, like you said, I mean, people have to know what to do with it when they get it. And not only that, but how to make it tasty and, you know, something that their families will enjoy. And something that they can maybe preserve or put up for in their freezer or in canning if they get too much at once. You know, a lot of times the food gets distributed to people and it might be just a lot of one thing and they can't use it quickly enough. So having those skills to do that canning or preserving in different methods can also go a long way to making sure that they can use all that food.
Before we continue, I want to remind folks about my guests here. We have, of course, Winona Bynum, who is with us, as well as Danielle Todd. Winona Bynum, Executive Director of the Detroit Food Policy Council, and Danielle Todd of Make Food Not Waste. We're talking about $1 million grant to help to address food insecurity in the region in the era of coronavirus. Winona, I want to get back to you for just a second, because there are a number of people that may find themselves in this situation for the first time as a result of this. You know, we were talking beforehand about, you know, all of us have been impacted in some capacity. Many of us have lost jobs, lost income streams, and a lot of people may not think that they, you know, that they're deserving or qualify for some kind of food aid, or they just don't know how to go about finding it or getting it or asking for it. What advice do you have for people that maybe are finding themselves in the situation for the first time and, frankly, are maybe feeling a little bit of a stigma or a shame about needing this kind of help, even though it's not their fault?
Right, right. There is no stigma, no shame in needing help. And so part of this project, what we're doing is making sure people have information on how to connect with federal programs, how to connect with organizations around the city that are providing this type of help. And just really, there is no shame in this. This is just to come out and get the things that you need for yourself, for your family. One of the things that we'll be doing also is, you talked about education. We will also be having all the classes and all of the offerings are being, of course, done virtually. So we'll be archiving these videos on our on the Detroit Food Policy Council YouTube channel and pointing to others' pages to make sure information. So you can visit our page and we'll be updating it with information and pointing out to all of these different places that you can get help.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, Danielle, I wanted to sort of get your take on that question in another way. I mean, you look at the number of people, and I'm watching videos around the country of people lining up for some sort of food assistance right now, as this pandemic is, of course, hitting this big wave that we're in right now, and businesses are closing. What are you seeing in terms of the people that you're helping right now and the types of folks that are coming out for help?
We're absolutely seeing a surge in demand and requests. And to Winona's point, there absolutely is no shame in any of this. You know, this is something that's happening in every location across the entire country right now. We had, to your point, Craig, you know, we had a 48% food insecurity rate in Detroit before this happened. So I don't know that the numbers have come out yet of where we are now, but I'm sure that's a lot higher. We're seeing that women especially are not seeing their jobs recover because they have childcare responsibilities with the schools closed. So that's going to hit families even harder. So, I think if you're listening to this and you are experiencing a situation that you do need help, reach out to their state resources, federal resources, like Winona said. But yes, families especially are the hardest hit in this because of schools being closed. And plus we find that when food insecurity rises, it's kids that really struggle the most.
Well, and obviously $1 million is helpful for a program like this, Winona. It's a big deal to get it, but a much larger federal response is needed. We touched on this back in March, and we haven't seen anything since the spring, and we're now about to hit 2021 in the middle of a pandemic, and the Congress still hasn't come together on any kind of a relief package. What needs to be done? And do you think that with the lines we're seeing around the country, that we might finally be getting people's attention to the immediacy of the need?
Yes. So we definitely need additional federal aid. Definitely. And we're hoping that this will get, we're certain that this will get folks' attention, that there is that need and get our lawmakers to get us some much needed additional relief. In the interim, what we're asking is if anyone is able, it's again, all hands on deck. So if you are able to help these organizations, and we'll have lists of the organizations who are doing this work, if you're able to help them bridge this gap. Like I said, this funding goes to December 30th. After that, it's gone. And until we get some additional federal relief to help these organizations continue to help people on the ground, anything people can do to help, there'll be volunteer, opportunities, but as well as giving resources. If you have additional resources and you're able to provide anything to these organizations doing this work, then that's a wonderful thing. So we need additional help from our government, but until in that interim, anything people can do to help bridge that gap is wonderful and much welcome.
Well, and the opportunities, I'm guessing, like I said, yes, obviously if somebody's got money that they can donate to any of the organizations involved in this, great. But I'm assuming that there's also some room for some physical labor, some expertise, perhaps. What kinds of help do you need? Because a lot of people like to do something personal, something that they can actually, get in there and do a little work for the good. So what sort of opportunities exist for people that would maybe are looking for an opportunity for their family to show that they can serve and do good things?
So, yeah, we find that, we've heard from a lot of the food rescue organizations that it's been harder to find volunteers just because people are uncomfortable being inside. They want to help, but that prohibits some people from being able to join in. But if you are comfortable with, all the groups take as much precaution as they can. But now that we're going into winter, a lot of these volunteer opportunities will probably be indoors. But you can contact really any of the food rescue or food bank organizations in the area, like Forgotten Harvest, Gleaners, Food Rescue U.S. Detroit, as well as smaller ones that you may find in your, you know, immediate neighborhoods. A lot of churches are doing outreach as well. So you can definitely find places to jump in and help where if you're comfortable doing so.
Well, and I want to sort of point out that the Detroit Food Policy Council has sort of an umbrella organization here that's got links to all these different organizations, Winona, if I'm not mistaken. It's DetroitFoodPC.org, correct?
It is. It is. So,
DetroitFoodPC.org. Well, I just want to say thank you to both of you for taking the time to talk a little bit about the situation and for the work that you're doing for the community, because it is incredibly important in this day and age. And as people are thinking about Thanksgiving and the meal there, think about all these other folks that might need some help right now. And if you can offer anything, it's a good thing to do. And keep up the good work, both of you. I want to thank Danielle Todd and Winona Bynum for being here today. You know, let us know how this goes. And obviously, as you said, the end of December is when this runs out. But I have a feeling that the need is going to stretch well beyond December 30th. Just because the calendar changes does not mean that this goes away.
So true.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. It was great being here.
Again, special thanks to Winona Bynum, who is the Detroit Food Policy Council Executive Director, and also Danielle Todd, who is the director at Make Food Not Waste, which, of course, is an organization that is providing 5,000 Thanksgiving meals to 1,000 families over the next couple of days. They're also providing cooking supplies, classes, but they're one of a number of organizations that are going to be working on food insecurity issues with this $1 million grant. People like Oakland Avenue Farm, Keep Growing Detroit, Detroit Food Academy, Eastern Market Corporation, Saffron Detroit, Deeply Rooted Produce, and, of course, the Detroit Food Policy Council. There's a lot of organizations that are doing this work. And some things to think about here. There are a number of homebound seniors that rely on these types of services to make sure that they have the food that they need in this climate right now. This is the way that they get their food, especially when you can't get delivery from grocery stores in a timely fashion. It's something to think about. Also, something else to consider. The number of school children who rely on schools for multiple meals each day that are not in school right now, that may not have the access to the food that the way they did before. A number of holes in our food delivery system have been exposed by the coronavirus, and this is the most basic need that people have, the need for quality food. If there's something you can do, it is incredibly, incredibly appreciated, not just by me, obviously, but by the thousands and thousands and millions of people around the country that are suffering right now and dealing with food security issues. So again, here in Detroit, go to DetroitFoodPC.org, DetroitFoodPC.org. Find out a way that you might be able to help out if you are in a position to do so. And if you're in a position where you can't and you need their assistance, go there as well. Find out what you can do and what you can, you know, what might be available to you if you need some help. There is no shame in asking for help when you need it. So thanks, everybody. Have a good Thanksgiving, and again, think about others. That's what this is all about. All right, stick around. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, some thoughts on what we witnessed yesterday in regards to the Board of Canvassers. Amazing to me. The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Mad Dog Professional Services. Mad Dog Professional Services focuses on putting their clients on the leading edge of technology, faster than thought possible, to capture new revenue streams. That's Mad Dog Professional Services. Hey, Craig here. Thanks for listening today. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about this, because the fact that it happened at all is still something that I'm just adjusting to today. But yesterday, tens of thousands of people were in the online Zoom call to watch the Michigan State Board of Canvassers meeting yesterday. What is normally just a run-of-the-mill exercise in certifying the votes that had already been certified at the local level became something of a circus, as the question as to whether or not this would be indeed, whether they were going to put their rubber stamp on this election was going to happen or not. There had been some signals from one of the members, Norm Schinkel, that he might not vote to certify. When it was brought to his attention that that may be illegal, he chose to abstain instead. However, Three of the four members did vote to certify the election, meaning Michigan's election results are official. Joe Biden is the winner of the state of Michigan. Also, Gary Peters is the winner of the Senate contest here in the state of Michigan. And all of the other races up and down the ballot are now official. They're in the books. Now, after Michigan certified its vote, Pennsylvania followed suit. There are a couple of outstanding lawsuits out there by the Trump administration, but they're not going anywhere. They don't have any evidence, and there certainly is not an audience there in the courts that seems to be willing to give air to some of the conspiracy theories that are being thrown out there about there being a rigged election, whether it's about the Dominion machines. By the way, Dominion's going to be the new Benghazi, I think, for some of these folks. Whatever. But there's nobody out there listening to this in any serious capacity. These cases aren't going anywhere, despite what Trump's lawyers, who are charging him a lot of money, are suggesting. They're still going to raise money on this. They're still going to try to find a way to get people to believe that there's some vast conspiracy out there to throw the election. But when you take a look at everything, you look at the recounts in Georgia, you look at the count in places like Arizona and Michigan and Pennsylvania, it's just not going to be overturned. Joe Biden is the president-elect. And the General Services Administration is now admitting as much and is going to allow the Biden administration to start working on its transition to the office. They take office on January 20th. This is a very important six-week period that we're in right now to actually get them up to speed so they're ready to go when they do take the oath of office, because there is no learning curve here. You don't have time as the president of the United States to grow into the job. You need to start it on day one as best you can. And a healthy transition is something that allows that to take place. And it's never perfect for anybody, obviously. But this last 2 weeks has been pretty ridiculous. And I think it was highlighted yesterday with the Board of Canvassers meeting that took place. There were 500 people in line to give public comment. And mercifully, when they knew that they had the votes in hand, they called the vote early. And the great thing is that a bunch of those people stayed on the line so they could continue that public comment, so they could have their voice heard and let them know that anybody messing with their vote is something that they were not going to tolerate. So this chapter is over. We now begin the transition period. And maybe we get back to normal in some capacity, because these last 4 years have been anything but normal. And that's not to suggest that they've been a complete disaster. I'm not going to say that at all, because there are a whole lot of people that think that their lives were improved by Donald Trump. I disagree with them, but I don't know what their experience has been. I can't automatically just sit there and say that they were wrong. They felt strongly enough that they decided to vote for Donald Trump in large numbers. He got a lot of votes. Now, what I'm going to be watching is what happens to those Trump supporters in the absence of Donald Trump. Where do they turn their energy? Is there another person that's going to try to wrest control of that wing of the party, the Republican Party, from Donald Trump? Because that is a pretty powerful base that he has there. And any politician that is hoping to win on that side or get nominated in 4 years is definitely going to need that group of people. But what form does it take? Because all of this is for me, is just sort of an extension of the Tea Party, which was an extension of the Contract with America and everything else that came before it. And nationalist candidates, populist candidates, always will generate some sort of support. So who's going to try to pick up that mantle? Will anybody challenge Donald Trump? And will Trump even run again in 4 years? Who knows? He says he's going to. I'll be interested to see what happens between now and then. But what happens to this movement that he created? What happens to this group of people that firmly believe that he was the one? It wasn't necessarily built around the Republican Party. It was built around Donald Trump. And the Republican Party is in fits right now, trying to figure out what this means for them. Is there room for a moderate Republican anymore? Is there such a thing anymore? And the longer that these people who are in power in the Republican Party stay silent about this whole thing, because a lot of them still don't want to cross Donald Trump because they're worried about what would happen to their prospects. Will he somehow sick his attack dogs on them, as he has done to so many people in the past? But the Republicans are in dangerous territory here. At some point, somebody is going to have the guts to stand up to Donald Trump and take a really, really good look at what he has done to the party and what he has done to the conservative movement. I'm not necessarily a person who's in favor of one-party rule. I think left up to their own devices, each party has the potential to be potentially destructive if they're not reined in a little bit. Now, it doesn't mean I wouldn't like to see some significant changes in the way we do things in this country. I think healthcare is something that we need to address. I certainly think that we need to address some of the racial inequalities that exist in our society that are built in and baked in to the society. We need to take a serious look at that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the whole world is going to change for everybody or that somebody's going to have something taken away from them in a quest to bring equality to our society. I think we can do these things. But the one thing that I still worry about is that we are easily taken in by somebody that scares us. And I'm not saying they scare us personally. What I'm saying is they put forth ideas meant to make us afraid. We are susceptible to this as Americans. We have been for a long time. It has pushed us backwards on numerous occasions. We are a two steps forward, one step back nation. We always have been since the very beginning. Every time we make a little progress, there's always somebody who wants to push it back just a little further. Somebody who wants to somehow imply that our past was this sort of sepia-toned, beautiful place where everybody could just do what they wanted if they just worked hard enough, when that's never been true. Yes, that story works for a lot of people. But for a lot of folks, they don't necessarily want to recognize the advantages that they may have had built in. They certainly don't want to recognize that their privilege has been built on the backs of people that have been left behind. And intentionally so for much of our history. There is nothing wrong with recognizing that this country can be better. There's nothing wrong with recognizing that there are things that we need to fix. And there's nothing wrong with looking at concrete ways in which to do it. Do not be afraid to look forward. Do not be afraid to think about ways that we can improve. Self-reflection is very, very important. And looking backwards is important as well, but only if we do so with a clear lens. This notion of make America great again? No. I've rejected this idea a number of times because, yes, no matter how good the economy may have been for certain people, there's always been a group left behind. And there's a lot of people that think that their own prosperity cannot continue if somehow everybody else is given an opportunity to participate. I reject that notion. I think we can do this. Now, I'm not suggesting that Joe Biden is going to magically fix all the problems in the United States. I think he's going to face a lot of opposition from day one. I think his cabinet picks are going to be scrutinized by the right and left alike. And I think he's going to face difficult times in Congress, especially depending on what happens in the Senate. But part of me is really excited at the prospect of politics being just a bit boring once again. It's been a weird few weeks, everybody. Everybody's stressed out. COVID is not helping, but I still wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and I hope you find a way to be with your family one way or the other, whether it's virtual, whether it's in person, but you do it safely, and remember the things that we do have to be thankful for, and if there's something you can do to make somebody's life a little bit better, I encourage you to do so. Obviously, the people I talked to earlier in the program today would love your support. But for those of you that were disappointed in the election results, it's going to be okay. America will continue on, and maybe, just maybe, we'll improve a few things. Some of things might get screwed up. You never know, because you can't control what everybody else does. But we're going to do okay. And hopefully, we do okay for a lot more people than we used to. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We'll talk again next week. The Craig Folly Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.